Welcome back, everybody. Today we are back with Kimberly and we're going to go over GLPs. Hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to the FastFit podcast, where exercise meets simplicity. I'm Kyle Recchia, CEO of FastFit. We hope you enjoy the show. All right, welcome back, everybody. Kimberly, we are going to go into some even cooler stuff today, if that's possible, because I think the other stuff is really, really cool.
I like all of it.
I bet. But I think one thing that's coming up quite often from people is this conversation around GLPs.
Yeah.
So in the last episode, we talked about our fat loss program that you and I are partnering on, our business is partnering on, which I'm really, really excited about.
Me too.
I have people in my world that GLPs are evil and they're killing everybody. And then there are people in the world that I know that are GLPs are probably a longevity medical thing here.
Yep.
And then people in the middle are like, what the heck is a GLP?
Right.
So maybe you could just help us out with all of this here today.
So let's first talk about GLP-1s are peptides.
Okay.
So let's start talking about what is a peptide.
Peptide first. Okay.
So peptide is a substance in the body. And the most common one that people know about is insulin. Mm. So insulin is made in your pancreas. If you don't make any insulin, you're a type 1 diabetic. It used to be called juvenile onset diabetes, but actually some adults can acquire it, particularly after a winter illness and a virus. That seems to be the trigger. We don't know why. So insulin out of your pancreas is how you control blood sugar. When you have too much blood sugar, type 2 diabetes is insulin resistance.
Okay.
So you make plenty of insulin, you just become resistant to it because your body doesn't know what to do with all this extra sugar. So that's type 1 and type 2 diabetes.
And so insulin is a peptide.
Insulin is a peptide.
And are peptides, are they a protein? Are they amino acids? Is there some sort of makeup?
Peptides have a job to do.
They have a job.
And so different peptides do different jobs.
Okay.
Just to oversimplify it. And then GLPs are additional peptides responsible for sugar metabolism and elimination in the human body.
Okay.
So GLP-1, glucagon-like peptide,
okay,
is what's in Ozempic.
Okay.
That's it. It's a peptide that humans make when they're healthy, and when they don't, we need to replace it.
We make GLP-1?
Yeah. So you make GLP-1 in your lower small intestine.
And so do these lizards in some desert that were...
That's how you found it, from the... Gia monster spit.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So that was, they're like, what's this?
It's wild.
I went through and figured out it's GLP-1. So the lower small intestine typically is where the human body makes GLP, glucagon-like peptide, in response to consuming carbohydrates.
Okay.
So sugar and carbohydrates are kind of interchangeable. A Jolly Rancher and a baked potato and a pile of Brussels sprouts are all going to turn into sugar in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, one is a little more nutritious,
right?
Nutritious than the other. But those are all going to become carbohydrates or sugar, blood sugar. And you need to do something with them. You need to use them, metabolize them, either get them into the cell or eliminate them from the body. So GLP, glucagon-like peptide, there's that peptide word.
Yeah.
Is made in the lower small intestine in a healthy human.
Okay.
GIP, gastric inhibin peptide, is made in the duodenum, which is the very beginning of the small intestine coming off the stomach.
Okay.
Those two compounds, GLP, GIP, is what's in tirzepatide.
Okay.
GLP alone is what's in Ozempic.
Okay.
That's it. So these are tools we can use to replace what is missing.
And what do they do? And what's the important differences maybe between the two?
Obviously, one has two peptides and one has one.
Yeah.
And what that means is tirzepatide is a much more elegant solution.
Okay.
It's better tolerated. Tirzepatide doesn't have the constipation, the projectile vomiting, the nausea, the acid reflux. All of that is almost exclusive to Ozempic.
Okay.
Or semaglutide, which is its generic name.
So it's not fair, so to speak, for these symptoms that are giving a bad rap to... GLPs, Ozempic, and semaglutide, is that what you said?
Semaglutide is Ozempic.
Huh? Okay. And what was the other one?
So tirzepatide has brand names of Mounjaro,
right,
or Zepbound.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So a lot of, when people are talking about GLP-1s have negative side effects, they're talking about GLP-1s specifically.
You can get them with tirzepatide as well.
Okay.
They're almost always dose dependent. So if you ratchet up the dose really quickly, you're ratcheting up the side effect profile also very quickly.
I see.
And what most of the studies, and, you know, we've had these now for years. So those of us that have been using these medications for a long, long time, we don't have to go up on the dose.
Mm.
If we just give it more time, we can get there.
Is how regulated is this stuff?
Well, they're FDA approved medications.
Okay.
With data showing safety and efficacy.
Okay.
Now, how each individual provider uses them.
Yeah. That's what I'm kind of thinking here is
to that provider.
Because they've gotten so popular so fast.
Yes.
It seems to me one of the dangers is I'm going to throw somebody on Ozempic and I'm just going to give them a whole bunch. And
that's what happened with weight loss clinics.
Okay.
They wanted to shock and awe. You wanted the Instagram, look what I did in 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And what you did was give them gallstones and maybe gallbladder surgery and maybe pancreatitis and acid reflux and constipation and
all these things that people are afraid of when it comes to the conversation of
GLP-1. None of those things are better.
Yeah.
Right. So any weight loss journey of greater than 20 pounds, the faster that happens, the greater the risk of gallbladder dysfunction and needing gallbladder surgery.
Hmm.
So if you just slow your roll,
yeah,
right, so to speak, then we can get there and we can do so safely.
Okay.
So we always want to end healthier than where we began. At the very least, not sicker.
Right.
And then we got to talk about muscle with weight loss, but we're going to get there.
Yeah.
So with the GLP-1s, right now there's two. There's a third one coming out probably in 2026 called retatrutide.
Okay.
And that is GLP, which is what's in Ozempic, mm-hmm, plus GIP. Those two things make up tirzepatide and glucagon.
Okay.
When you add glucagon to those two, the people in the retatrutide studies lost 25% of their body mass in less than a year.
Would this be muscle too?
They just measured mass.
Okay. So?
Yes. Now, I'm sure some of it was muscle.
Sure.
But the problem is they also had the most pancreatitis and gallbladder disease of all three medications.
Oh, man.
So for us, we're going to wait because I can actually already get it compounded. By the way, I already can get it.
Hmm.
Which people call me for it. Like, you can get it. Yes, I can. Can I have it? No, you cannot.
Yeah, good for you.
We're going to start with tirzepatide, the most elegant solution that works the best with the lowest dose and the lowest side effect profile. And we're going to give that at least 6 months.
Okay.
And then we're going to see. Now, I have a couple of people I have my eye on. They've been very refractory and resistant to the tirzepatide. I don't really bother with semaglutide anymore. The side effects were just too awful. So I might try some very low dose retatrutide and leave them on that low dose for a long time to see if that is the missing piece for some refractory people. But I start them on tirzepatide.
And so what are these GLP ones doing? How are they helping with weight loss? And then second, there are conversations around, are they geoprotective? Are they some longevity drug in addition for the other impacts they might have on the body? Can you speak to those things?
I can tell you that, yes, they're trending and looking, and there's actually some data now showing that particularly tirzepatide is geroprotective.
Wow. Well,
geroprotective means you will live longer if you use this as a tool when needed.
And we don't know why, right? The mechanism?
When needed.
When needed, okay.
Yes. And I can tell you why. So pre-diabetes, which in my practice is a hemoglobin A1C, which is a blood test that measures 3 months of your blood sugar averages. Mm-hmm. If that hemoglobin A1C is at or above 5.5,
okay,
this is on people who don't have the genetic risk for Alzheimer's, and we can talk about that separately. For people who don't have this APOE4 genotype for Alzheimer's, the bulk of the population at or above 5.5 is prediabetes, because that is where we start seeing brain changes in response to that extra blood sugar. Your brain makes up about 3 to 5% of your body mass, but it takes 20% or more of all the calories you consume. So any kind of sugar dysbiosis is 3 to 4 to 5 times worse in your brain than anywhere else in your body.
That's wild.
So we want to make sure that what we're eating and how we're metabolizing what we're eating isn't causing inflammation and these changes that will elicit an amyloid plaque production in the brain, okay, that's Alzheimer's.
Okay.
So we do know that if we can get the blood sugar, and that's why I said when appropriate.
Right.
So let's say somebody comes in and, you know, he or she has body fat percentage of 20 and their cardiac scans are clear, mm-hmm, and their cholesterol looks great. Everything looks great except their hemoglobin A1C is 5.8.
And how many, it's hard to answer this, but what percentage of people that you see are above 5.5?
Way just more ballpark than before COVID.
Really?
Yeah, like fivefold more.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we the American Academy of Family Physicians has a position statement out about this as well. Either the data set on a fasting blood sugar was not robust enough.
Okay.
I'm not going to say wrong, but not robust enough, but I don't think so because it was a pretty good data set. Or COVID, either catching it or being vaccinated against it, or both, because we've all had it, changed something about how humans use and eliminate sugar.
Wild.
Because I have people now that have normal fasting blood sugar, and they're full-on pre-diabetic, even by American Endocrinological Society standards, which is 5.8 above.
5.8. Mm-hmm. So more than half, maybe, or 5.5 or so?
At least a third now.
Okay.
And I used to not see it like this.
So I'll remind people, too, of a prior episode, and because you just also mentioned this, like the SNP for Alzheimer's is... Yeah. Your clinic does the full spectrum when it comes to functional testing.
Yeah.
And so looking at these things like your A1C, looking at these things like the genetic SNPs, et cetera, help paint that picture so you can understand, is this tool really going to be something that increases their longevity? Not just a tool for someone that might need to lose some fat.
Yep. So I have people who are, you know, pre-diabetic, but everything else is great. I'm going to put them on a low dose of tirzepatide because pre-diabetes is pre-Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. Western medicine says watch and wait. Watch it what?
Yeah.
Cause Alzheimer's?
Yeah.
I'm going to stop that process now before it's a mess.
But you have to.
So I'll have someone who has no weight to lose on a really tiny dose. I might microdose them just enough to bring that A1C down.
Okay. And how is it doing that?
So insulin is how you get blood sugar out of the blood and into the cell.
Okay.
GLP-1, and so GLP and GIP has a lot more to do with how do you eliminate sugar at the end and get it out of the body.
Okay.
And so when you give someone tirzepatide, you actually see an increase, a slight increase in sugar in the urine.
Hmm.
So we have to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Too much.
Okay.
If you have an A1C, that 3-month blood sugar average, at or above 5.5, you have too much sugar.
Okay.
And it's either because you're eating too much sugar or you can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
So
both.
There are people on almost keto. High A1C. So they don't have enough of what they need to get rid of the sugars.
They need to get out of the body.
An entrance problem, an elimination problem, or maybe even both.
Yeah, okay.
I typically don't wait. I'm going to start treating, and then we can circle back to other lifestyle things we can do. So, you know, I might put someone who has no weight to lose on tirzepatide if they have polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Okay.
We also know that women with PCOS... they typically have metabolic syndrome that goes with it. Mm-hmm. With that, we believe, and there's some good studies out of Sweden now showing that PCOS about 80% of the time goes with a deficiency of GLP and GIP production.
Oh.
They never made it.
So is this a sugar issue in PCOS?
It's like diabetes. It just doesn't have a name yet.
Oh my gosh.
So with PCOS, they don't make GLP and GIP. So what that means is she never had a moral problem mm-hmm. at the refrigerator. Mm-hmm. She had an undiagnosed metabolic problem her doctor missed.
And how many decades and hundreds and thousands of millions of people that have dealt with this?
When I show a woman her labs and I say, these are all the things that have been missed, and you have not been making moral mistakes, mm-hmm. the healthcare system failed you and I can fix it. The tears that come. I keep multiple lab coats at my clinic because I'm a hugger and I get all the makeup on this side.
So I can only imagine.
Because it was never her fault. And, you know, if you tell a woman who's holding on to extra weight because her thyroid's trash or she doesn't have any testosterone or she doesn't make GLP and GIP because she never did because she has PCOS, none of this is your fault. There's this really elegant medication I can give you to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
The relief that comes from that and the, you know, I do a lot of hand-holding with, you just need to take all of those moments in time that you called yourself a failure because the pants didn't zip or the whatever didn't work or the doctor told you you're doing it wrong and just forgive all of that situation because maybe the doctor didn't know because we haven't had these medications for all that long.
Yeah.
So maybe we didn't know to look for it and it was never, ever, ever your fault.
Hmm.
I think that's really healing. And I think that's it's a really lovely, it's a, that is just this wonderful front row seat that I get to have. And I'm really lucky.
I can imagine.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, that feels good.
So somebody is dealing with PCOS and you put them on tirzepatide?
Tirzepatide, the one that I like.
Yeah. And then what are the outcomes?
So we start with a low dose and we leave it for 3 to 4 months. I don't go up on the dose until we have another A1C that shows it hasn't corrected as much as we want and we don't have any weight loss.
And this is one of the mistakes most people make. They're just trying to
They go up
titrate
every month.
Like crazy. Okay.
Don't do that. And even I did that in the beginning.
Sure.
Because that's how we were taught.
Right.
And then we got all of these phone calls and I had a person who didn't poop for a week and that's not better.
Yeah.
So we had to medicate that. Before even the experts in the area were like, hey, you should slow down. We were already slowing down because we weren't seeing the benefit.
Yeah.
And the more we slowed down, the more we realized, oh, just give it more time. And then they still get there. And so with PCOS, the acne gets better. The hair gets better. I've had 2 now have pregnancies.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Which is like something that doesn't happen really. PCOS, right? I mean, it's
well, there's now a lot of data out there showing that if you improve blood sugar, specifically with tirzepatide, you better make sure she's on birth control because she might not have fertility issues. She might have had an undiagnosed metabolic disorder that you just fixed.
Wow.
So she's not ready to be pregnant. We don't want that surprise.
This is a whole new paradigm in this whole area.
That's functional medicine.
Yeah.
If she's not able to get pregnant and she has PCOS, are you treating the right issue?
Right.
Because guess what? It's not gynecological. Mm-hmm. It's metabolic.
Okay.
And probably the GLP-GIP deficiency is what makes the PCOS, not the other way.
Okay.
I mean, time will tell, but that's what it's looking like.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean,
those are peptides.
Hey, that's beautiful. So, okay, those are peptides. And then when you say the word peptide, I think other people, one, I myself was like, wait, GLPs are a peptide? Because I've also heard the word peptide used for peptides like BPC-157, all these weird spaceship numbers and things like that. What are those?
So BPC-157 is BPC-157. It's like insulin is insulin. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Okay.
BPC-157 is a peptide made in the stomach. A lot of these peptides are made in the stomach, which makes sense because the stomach is the first receptor of the food.
Right.
And so we're going to respond.
And they're doing those jobs, like you said.
Responding to incoming, right?
Okay.
So BPC-157 is really responsible for gut health. So we see improvement in people with Crohn's disease, IBS, just different gut issues do really well with BPC-157. It also has a role in tendon and ligament health.
Well,
I can't tell you why.
We don't know.
We know why.
It's just an outcome we're observing when people are on.
They just go together. And so when we see tendonitis, you know, ACL reconstruction surgery, we definitely want to be on BPC-157. Okay. So anytime there's gut issues and or tendon and ligament issues, this is a peptide we're going to reach for. You used to only be able to get it via injection. BioT now has and I carry it in my clinic, in my online store, an oral version that actually has blood levels.
And it works well.
Yeah.
Is that liposomal? Is it a fat delivery thing? Or
that's a really good question that I wish you hadn't asked me.
No, that's okay.
Good.
Because I guess most of these are sensitive, right? That's why they have to be done through an injection.
I can tell you that. I don't remember the formula.
Yeah.
That was a couple years ago when it launched. But I can tell you that they did on the oral BPC-157, did check blood levels after, and we got there.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of these peptides, right? And so I guess for the people listening to this, what's the 80-20 here? What are the ones that you recommend in your clinic that you use maybe most often and for what purposes? And that might be a good way to kind of wrap this up because, as always, these are big, complex conversations. And my suggestion is to be, if you're interested in these things and you feel like you're a good candidate and there are outcomes you're looking for, work with someone like Kimberly because we're not going to be able to deliver all that on this podcast. What I want to do is give them some nuggets and some sort of clear paths to start walking towards. So,
for the peptide world, I'm peptide certified. I did a 4-month program and learned about all these different peptides that some are still commercially available and some are not anymore because this was about 6 years ago. And I really just reach for a few of them.
Okay.
Most of the peptides you'll get at a peptide clinic are to get you to make testosterone.
Interesting.
I just start with the testosterone. Can we just keep it simple? Because otherwise you're doing 5 injections a day. It's too much. And then I have to be refrigerated. How do you travel? So the ones that I reach for are going to be tirzepatide.
Okay.
Hands down, number 1.
I really like ceramorelin with glycine.
Okay.
And that is for people who have a low IGF-1, which is low growth factor.
Low growth factor, IGF-1.
For whom testosterone alone isn't enough to rebuild everything we've lost.
Okay.
And so I might reach for ceramorelin glycine.
Okay.
And that's a 5 out of 7 nights a week injection.
And you're doing that after measuring their IGF-1?
Yes, but I still give it a year on testosterone before I'll reach for that.
Because you need to, you want to see if it's even needed.
They might not need it.
We got it.
Yeah, we start with the basics and then we see if we need to tweak it.
So cool. Later. By the way, I know you know this, but you can just go online right now and some ads going to pop up like, hey, we'll sell you some peptides. We don't even know who you are, which is crazy.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't. That's a really good way to separate you from your money and not get the results
of mine.
Delta sleep inducing peptide, we can't get anymore, but I used to use it a lot for insomnia.
Okay.
It's wonderful. Came out of European studies. There are a couple of other ones that are good, PT-141 and sexual wellness. But again, why are we doing PT-141 or bromanolitan injections an hour before sexual activity with all of these side effects, including vomiting?
Ew.
So you do your injection, then you go throw up, and then you can have sex?
I mean, I'd rather die.
That's not better. When probably why we have sexual dysfunction is not enough testosterone. Right. So
you're back to the root.
So much of the peptide world is fixing the lack of testosterone. I can fix almost all of it by starting at the base.
Yeah, and if you're new to this episode and you missed the one on hormones, I highly encourage you to go back and listen to that because we just get rid of all the fallacies there and create a nice clean slate when it comes to the conversation around these ones.
Now, there's another really interesting one that was discovered in about mid-2025, and it's called octodecaneuropeptide, or ODN for short.
Okay.
The glial cells, which are the support cells in the brain, the neurons are the ones that fire, and then the glial cells are like their helper cells. Glial cells make ODN to metabolize sugar in the brain.
Hmm.
And we already talked about how Alzheimer's is pre-diabetes. So what's coming from that? And how do we measure ODN? How do we replace ODN? And is that going to be the best solution for Alzheimer's?
That's a while.
That's cool. I'm very excited.
It's an exciting, I mean, there's a lot to do and it's an exciting time.
But Dr. Dale Bredesen, who's a famous neurologist and he wrote the book, The End of Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. has been reversing Alzheimer's disease, confirmed amyloid plaque Alzheimer's disease with testosterone, vitamin D, and tirzepatide. As the big three players. He has a whole other protocol. There's pages and pages of it, but the big three players are those three.
Well,
you know, all three today at my clinic.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are the ones you'd focus on, but it comes back to
the big ones and then see if we need any to fine tuning later.
Okay, cool.
Because I don't want to put somebody on buckets of shots
right.
until I fix the base problem.
Exactly. And that's that functional medicine piece. Yeah. Okay, well, let's wrap it up this way.
Yeah.
Ben, I think if you could, producer Ben here, if we could make sure we get a link at the bottom of these podcasts and YouTube channel to our fat loss program. Our fat loss program, for those that are new to it, we at FastFit, we're just evidence-based, right? And so we want to take the things that are not only evidence-based, but are also easy and simple for you to do when it comes to your health. And so we've got three things on that fat loss program. One of them is just a really cool app and tool for watching your energy balance and the calories and protein and things like that. We've got some cool stuff on meal replacements, like actually getting food delivered to your house and things for, because meal prepping is great, but it's hard. Mm-hmm. And then finally, we are working with Kimberly and her team on these GLPs and really the full spectrum here. And you guys get a good special deal by working with her.
So for patients who are clients of yours who are not in Denver, we have a telehealth program. We have a remote medical weight loss program. We do require a full set of labs, my labs. We can get those at LabCorp, and you can get them at LabCorp where you live. Mm-hmm. And our GLP-1 with tirzepatide for the lowest dose starts at $150 a month.
$150 a month. What was the price on Mounjaro like for the average person a year ago?
A year ago, it was $1,000 a month.
$1,000.
I have a direct to patient now that's $359 for the first month, and it goes up to $500 on month three.
That's just crazy.
Mm-hmm. And to get it covered for by insurance, you have to be obese and have one, sometimes two, other health issues. We are so far past where we should have been treating.
Yeah.
And by the way, endometriosis, in Switzerland, they proved that women who have endometriosis, which is all these adhesions and scar tissue in the belly,
mm-hmm.
they don't have any GLP or GIP in their peritoneal fluid. Women without endometriosis do.
So what's happening if we...
So endometriosis is probably not a gynecological disorder. It is probably a metabolic one. In my clinic, women with endometriosis, we microdose with tirzepatide.
Okay.
And their symptoms go away.
This is just back to that same PCOS conversation.
Same thing.
It's like a miracle. And yet, so it's not, most people don't know this.
But the people who are like, oh, it's killing everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's because they're listening to somebody who went online and got God knows what from God knows who, and they ratcheted up their dose every month and weren't paying attention.
Yep.
This is a tool. If when any tool can be wielded well or poorly. And so making sure you go to someone who knows how to prescribe.
It's a dumb analogy, but I like the whole, it's the dose that makes the poison. And,
yes.
And even, of course, the poison that's being selected for that usage. But
yeah.
At the same time, it can be a miracle. So, okay. I'm so excited that we're working together on this stuff. I think it's going to bring a ton of value to our members. And just to, I mean, I had no idea that was going on with PCOS. And to see your heart there, I got a little choked up. If you're listening to this and you didn't, it's okay to not be human. But that's really cool stuff. So thank you for sharing that with us today. All right. See you soon.